Women have been giving birth for centuries, so it's a pretty natural experience, right? Wrong. I'm Stephanie King, professional doula, childbirth educator, and the creator of the My Essential Birth course, the online childbirth education course that's helping women everywhere confidently achieve their best birth. Today's culture would have us think that birth should be treated like an illness or an emergency, and that most of us need other people telling us what's best for our bodies because we aren't the experts. So sit tight, because if you're tuning into this podcast, you'll probably start to believe in your body, your intuition, and find yourself empowered and confident to do what it takes to have the birth of your dreams. If you like listening to me take you through these weekly topics step by step, then you're going to love the My Essential Birth course. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast and definitely head over to myessentialbirth.com for the free downloads mentioned right here in these episodes and to join the birth course and community full of pregnant moms just like you. I have to add a disclaimer that I am not a medical professional and I cannot provide medical advice. All of the information expressed in this podcast are based off of personal, professional, and educational experiences and are my own opinions. Please work with a provider you trust for medical advice during your pregnancy and birth. I know you guys are ready for another reviewer of the week. This one is I Heart Donuts, and so I think you and I might be soul sisters here. Just gonna throw that out. But she says, my dream birth. I started listening to this podcast as soon as I got pregnant back in August of 2021. I wanted to be as informed as I possibly could be and prepared to advocate for myself and my daughter. I hired a doula right away, and that was the best decision I've ever made. Me and you both, girl. Trust me. I listened to a few different podcasts just to get different perspectives before I decided on choosing a childbirth class, and I'm so glad I chose this one. I'm glad you did too. I love being part of the Facebook group, and I felt totally comfortable asking questions. I got a ton of information from the course, but I got most of the info from the podcast. My daughter was born 4/28/2022 at 40+6 by induction, and that's gonna come into play here in just a moment. She says, I had thought about just waiting until my body decides to go on its own, but I was also done being pregnant. I totally get that. They broke my water and started the induction at 7:45 a.m. and I was already 2 centimeters going in. She was born at 4:17 that same day. It was truly amazing and I felt so good and informed through the entire thing. My doula was fantastic and helped both my husband and I with whatever we needed. I think my husband got more from the course on how to support me because he was an absolute rock star and my rock from pregnancy through labor and birth and even through now when we have a 3-week-old. This podcast is a must listen to whether you're pregnant with your first baby or 10th. The evidence-based info is exactly what you need to dig deeper and do even more research for yourself and your baby, and it'll make you feel more prepared for whatever comes your way in your birth story. Pregnancy was really rough for me, but at least labor and delivery was a dream, and I'm loving being a mom. Thank you so much. What an incredible testimony to listening, to putting in the work, just using the knowledge for yourself. And that is exactly why I'm on here, you guys. I want you to listen. I don't just want to be talking just to talk, just to throw stuff out there. If you guys are listening, the goal is to take this information and do something with it. It's one thing to have it in your brain. It's another to utilize it. And that is what I'm here to help you do. At least I hope that's what this podcast is doing. And I hope the birth course does that too. I love, one of my favorite things that I do is taking all the information from the birth course. So the birth course is awesome because it's completely laid out. Do this and then do this and then do this, right? It is a step-by-step process. I hold your hand through the whole thing. If you do these things, these can be your outcome, right? But the podcast is where I can dive in a little bit deeper on specific, like tiny little things. And I can go a little bit deeper on it. And a lot of times there are questions from the moms within the Facebook group for the actual birth course. So if you're listening and this is one of those topics that you've been wondering about, then you're within the birth course, then that's why it's here. But the great thing about it is it's useful for all moms. The reason I chose this particular one was she was talking about induction. And this week's episode, I want to dive into what it looks like to have an induction without an epidural. I recently got this question in my DMs, and it's not the first time, and I know it won't be the last. And the question is, how do I have an unmedicated induction? Or in other words, how do I have an induction without an epidural, right? That's what the question really is about. It's an excellent topic. And I know that a lot of you are curious about it, or you will become curious about it. And so I want to go a little bit deeper and break this down for you guys today. So I'm going to walk through briefly, I want to talk about what you can expect from an induction. I want to talk about a couple of reasons why a mom might need one, different reasons that women choose to get the epidural or not get the epidural when you are talking about an induction. I want to talk about turning Pitocin on or off or down, because that's a big question I get to. Obviously, I want to give you the most important thing that you can do to prepare for one. Thing or things, right? Now, really quick, I want to throw this out there too. If you are listening and you haven't downloaded the new exercise guide, I have to throw this out here because I spent a lot of time on it and it's a whole new thing. It's the same 3 free exercises, but the guide now has a downloadable workbook. It's got an audio walkthrough. I do an entire video showing you exactly how to do the exercises. There's a tracker so that you can keep track of that. You get free goodies. There's a ton of stuff in there. So I want you guys to be able to utilize that. And if you're looking for it, obviously you can head to the show notes, but it's just myessentialbirth.com/3-exercises. And if you type that in, it'll take you right to the page. It kind of starts with the video. You'll see all of that stuff and you can sign up for it right there. If you haven't done that yet, you guys, these exercises will be life-changing, hopefully, for your entire pregnancy and birth. That's the goal, is to make your pregnancy and birth easier, more comfortable, and to make sure you have guidance. Let's talk about induction today. So what is an induction? For those of you, you know, that have been listening for a while, you know that I've talked about this before. But for you new moms out there, and especially you guys that are pregnant and you haven't heard anything about induction yet, particularly from your provider, this episode is going to be so eye-opening for you. In fact, I feel like every mom right now should prepare their bodies and do what they can as if they were going to have an induction. And I will tell you why. Because induction is rampant. And providers, I don't know what the deal is, but I feel like I know I have seen just personally, and know that I'm not talking about studies and stuff, so this is just my personal take on it. I know I have seen a bigger push than I ever had before for induction, and it was already on the brink of being way too big. Induction is just offered too much for too many reasons. 100% there are reasons that it does exist and why it's important, and I will talk about those today. But I just want you to be aware that there are things that we can do to prevent it and to prepare for it, and that's what we're going to go over. So when I'm talking about induction, for the purposes of this podcast episode, I am talking about medical induction, not natural induction, although there are things that we can do to encourage our bodies to go into labor, and even down to like using castor oil to get things moving. This one I'm going to talk about is for medical induction. And so this is an induction that is done in a hospital setting with a hospital provider. Now that can be a midwife or an OB, but they have to be a midwife that practices in a hospital. So a CNM that practices in the hospital, or an OB. And there's different methods. So there's the, we're just going to break your bag of waters and give you Pitocin. I do not recommend this method. I feel kind of weird with this episode because there's a lot of things that I can go into, and I'm not going to go into all of it. But just know, breaking the bag of waters with just Pitocin, those two things together can lead to a really long, uncomfortable labor that goes nowhere. I do not recommend this one alone. However, that is your choice. And there are women that have done it this way and it's worked successfully for them. And so it's really like a personal thing. Get educated on the whys behind it and work with your provider. And then the next one is Cervidil or Cytotec, or in other words, using a prostaglandin to soften your cervix with Pitocin, and or with Pitocin and breaking your bag of waters. This is another option. And then there's the, we're going to use a prostaglandin like Cervidil or Cytotec and get that cervix nice and soft and ripe. Then we're going to use something like a Foley bulb or a Cook's catheter, and we're going to use Pitocin. Now, a quick snippet. The Foley bulb and the Cook's catheter are both used to help dilate a cervix that is not very dilated. You have to be a little bit dilated. That way they can put the catheter through the cervix. And then what they do is they kind of blow up this little balloon on the other side of the cervix. This is the Foley bulb. And it pushes against, this is really hard for you guys to probably follow when I'm just saying it, but they put the catheter in, they blow up a little balloon that is past your cervix, and that balloon is supposed to put pressure against your cervix from the other side as if it were like the baby's head pushing against your cervix, so that it helps efface it or make it thinner and also dilate it or open it. That's the idea behind the Foley bulb. Now, the other one that they can use is called a Cook's catheter. It's very similar. There's a catheter that goes in. There's a balloon on that one side, just like the Foley bulb, but there's also a balloon on the outside of this one. So imagine like a straw and it's got a balloon on the end, and they put that straw inside and they blow it up. And then on the other side where the straw still exists, there's another balloon. So if those two balloons were being blown up at the same time, it would push against your cervix so that it can help from both sides, dilating that cervix, effacing that cervix. So opening it and thinning it out. Now, that is a preference thing. Sometimes it's just what the hospital has, a provider thing. Again, I'm not going to get into all that, but we're talking about a prostaglandin, Foley bulb, Pitocin, and or breaking the bag of waters. So as you can see, there are some different things that can be done in different orders and different amounts of things that can be done in order to get a body going into labor. But it's a lot of mechanical things that we do, very unnatural, not the body doing this on its own. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about induction. Now, why would somebody need an induction? And I am not going to go into all of the details here, but it would be things like I have really high blood pressure that's putting me and baby at risk, something like preeclampsia, which is, you know, high blood pressure, but also we've got protein in the urine and there's a chance of seizures or convulsions during labor or before, and that's not good. Some other reasons that we hear is, well, you've passed your due date. You know, I can't let you go past 41 weeks. You've got a COVID test that came back positive and we think it's best if XYZ, or even it's not even you that's tested positive. Maybe there's a big outbreak and we've heard this one before, or I'm going on vacation. I'm your provider and I won't be here, you know, in case you go into labor and I know that you want me here. So let's set an induction. There's some that are medically necessary and then there's some that are not. And it's really hard to be the mom in that situation that's trying to juggle those things. And oftentimes it's not until you run into a situation where you've either gotten pushed into an induction and you realize after, I shouldn't have done that, or you've hopefully like heard some stories maybe that weren't so great that you can learn from, or you're listening to really awesome podcasts and you're like, I remember that, or I took this birth course and I remember that. It doesn't mean when you get there, it's going to be so cut and dry and easy. And so it's okay, whatever you choose to do, as long as you're a part of that decision making. And it's why I really stress having a very, very strong birth support team. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to say it's somebody who needs an induction and it is safer for the baby to be out of mom's body than to be in. So whatever the case is, baby needs induction. And for the sake of this, we're going to talk about induction past 36 weeks. So with a full term baby and one who will not need NICU help afterwards. Here's kind of the why behind it. Like, why do women choose to have an epidural with Pitocin? Like, if they want to have an unmedicated birth, shouldn't they just be able to have an unmedicated birth? And the answer is twofold. And it's kind of like a yes and a no. The thing about induction is it can take a long time, particularly if you have a mom whose body is a little less prepared to go into labor. And I'll talk about the Bishop score in just a minute. But if you have some signs that show that mom's body isn't necessarily prepared for this process and there's more that needs to be done, and you have an excellent provider who's going to give you that time and work slowly with your body, which really is the best for it, it also means it can take a long time. And it also means it can be a little bit exhausting. And exhaustion is like the number one reason that women need some extra support in the way of medication or an epidural. So just keep that in mind. Be gentle with yourself. We want to do all the prep work that we can to have the birth that we desire, whatever that looks like for us. And so when I'm talking to women right now about this, this is induction without an epidural. So if the goal for this mom that I'm talking to right now, if that's you, is to not have an epidural, then these are some of the roadblocks that you need to be aware of that you're up against, so that should you choose to at some point utilize those tools, you don't have to feel bad about it. I hope that you would be in a position to say, I did all of these things. I did my prep work. I know for sure that I did everything on my end. And now I'm going to utilize this tool because I'm choosing to do it. And now we can move into the next stage of whatever that looks like. And I don't have to feel bad or guilty or anything like that. So that's a reason it can take a long time. And kind of along with that, oftentimes, and I wish I could give you all of the like beautiful answers as to why this is the case, because I don't get it, but they'll start moms in the middle of the night or really early in the morning. And for a mom who's pregnant and towards the end of her pregnancy, I mean, coming in to start an induction at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, I mean, it takes time. They're like, oh, we've got to get you set up in this room and get changed and get your IV. And okay, I'll send that next person in and you could be on the monitors for an hour before they send the next person in. And then we're talking Pitocin, you know, all of the like, and then we've got the Cervidil and the this and that. It just takes time. And so when you start late at night, on top of the fact that they're doing all of those things, when mom does finally get the okay to take a rest, you're in a hospital setting. And even with all the lights out and doors closed and everything, there is beeping, there are blinking lights, there are people walking past the door, there's loud noises, there's maybe somebody giving birth in the room next door. Like, there's just things that happen that make it not conducive to sleep. Not to mention, they're going to be checking your blood pressure. A nurse is going to come in and check on you every hour or so. Those are just the realities of being in a hospital. And so it makes it a little, like, you come in kind of like tired. And so that's the at night one. The other one is like, show up at 6 a.m. or make sure you call at 4 a.m. so we can let you know if we're going to have space for you at 6 a.m. You're like, if I'm waking up at 4 a.m., I'm already concerned about the induction. I've probably been up all night tossing and turning. I'm not very comfortable pregnant. So you see what kind of happens here. And it can be this cascade of I'm just tired that really, really kind of sets things in. So be aware of those things and think a lot about rest when it's coming to getting ready to go in for an induction. The other thing that we want to talk about is Pitocin specifically. So Pitocin is the artificial form of oxytocin. And what oxytocin does is it's called the love hormone. So it's a bonding hormone, but it also creates contractions. And when we don't have contractions because we're not in labor, but we need them because we'd like to be in labor, aka induction, then we use something called oxytocin. So, you know, first things first, you have to have an IV because that's how they get the Pitocin in you consistently. And I know that can be annoying for some moms, but they have to have the IV and then that Pitocin drips in, and those contractions are not the same as regular contractions. Some women do very, very well with them. And most women, I would say, they're like, Pitocin is the devil. It is just a harder thing to take on. And the reason for that is that regular contractions, when oxytocin comes on, we usually have some time to build up what's happening in our body. So that labor begins and it kind of comes on. Sometimes it's fast and furious, but for the most part, you have contractions that start in a place that are manageable, that are a little farther apart, and they're going to consistently get longer, stronger, and closer together. And also as they do that, as you have a contraction, maybe they start off lasting 30 seconds at a time, right? And so it's like, oh, it's coming on and you're kind of going up this hill, kind of up this mountain, and there's a peak. And you hit that peak maybe like 15 seconds, right? And so you're like, oh, it's getting harder, harder, harder. We're going up the mountain. You hit that peak and it slowly takes you down for the next 15 seconds, say. Well, with Pitocin, what happens is the Pitocin contractions are going, and a Pitocin contractions, instead of we're going up a mountain, is like, boom, you just got shot up. I'm thinking of like Supreme Scream at Knott's Berry Farm. If you guys are familiar with these rides, like, it's a straight up and down, right? Supreme Scream's a little different, right? Because they take you to the top and drop you. But you get what I'm saying. Like, if you had one that shot you straight up, it'd be like going straight up and then it holds at the top and it holds and it holds and then it drops and the contraction's done. And oftentimes they let go completely, but sometimes they don't. And so it just is a different sensation. It is a little trickier to try to get on top of and to deal with and to breathe through. So Pitocin alone, and depending on how your body handles it too, but Pitocin alone can be another reason that women choose to get an epidural, just from kind of that discomfort and stuff of moving through that. And then there's the mental game because it's trickier with induction. You don't know exactly where you are. A lot of times we are going off of the like, oh, well, there's some change there. You know, we've got a little more dilation, a little more effacement. The tricky thing with induction and Pitocin is like, oh my gosh, these contractions are so strong. And a lot of times it's like, oh, and you're 2 centimeters, you know, sometimes that can be the case. And in your head thinking like, I can't handle this kind of contraction if I have to for another 6 hours or whatever time limit you're putting on yourself. And so it's a big mental game. And there are other reasons that women choose epidurals, but those are just a couple that I wanted to throw out there. So here's a question that I get a lot too. This is totally reasonable, and I love this question. It's, can I turn the Pitocin off? And I do talk about this. I've talked about it before here on the podcast. I talk about it in the birth course, but can you turn the Pitocin off? Yes, and it's a touch tricky. So here's the thing. Anytime if it's too intense, if it's too strong, if it's whatever, the nice thing about Pitocin is that it can be shut off and it's out of your system really quick. So like a contraction or two, it's like a couple minutes and that Pitocin is like, ah, okay. The thing about it is sometimes the reaction that the body has to Pitocin is very strong. And even when you turn it off, those contractions are still going. So if it's this mental thing of like, I need a break, and they turn it off and now I'm not getting a break, that can be a little overwhelming. The other thing is maybe you do turn it off and it gives you a break. Contractions stop completely, which is very common when you're dealing with Pitocin and messing with this up and down. The thing about it is you have to start over. So say, for example, you have a really great provider that's going to start you low on Pitocin. And I say it this way because oftentimes we see they start it low, but they move it very quickly up, and they move it up and up and up until it's really too much, even for baby. And actually, it's called pit to distress in that situation. They turn it up so high that baby starts having like a little bit of distress and they're like, perfect, that's close to where we need it. Knock it down just a touch so that we make sure we're not hurting baby. But now it's really strong for mom and it should be doing what it's supposed to be doing. That is a little past, in my personal opinion, where you want to be, because that's really stressing the body and really close to stressing baby. So if you have a really great provider and they take it really slow, and they're moving it up just a point at a time, you know, 2, 3, 4 on the scale there. The great thing about that is it's going to give you a chance to get used to those contractions, maybe have a half hour before you're moving just a little bit farther up. And they're pushing that button and moving that Pitocin just a little bit farther up. The thing about doing that, though, is it can delay. So if you're like, oh, the contractions are so intense, I need a break, and you've been doing it for a while, it's like, okay, we'll turn the Pitocin down. But now we've got to work it back up. So now you're extending that birth by a couple of hours. And that is fine to an extent. However, the more time that we're in labor, the harder that can be for us, the harder that can be for baby. So just have that in your mind too, or just be aware of it. It's fair for you to be aware of those things. And that kind of goes along with, you know, another concern is we don't want to put baby in distress. And so if we're, you know, there's a ton of contractions, there's no contractions, there's a ton, there's none, baby gets tired too. And they don't get an epidural, right? At any point, they don't get a break. And the only break that they're going to get is the relax from the contractions. But it can be a lot on baby. And so yes, you can turn the Pitocin off. Yes, if you need it, absolutely ask for it. This is just information behind that. Now I want to get into the most important thing that you can do for induction. You guys are going to like this, I hope. Obviously, maybe not obvious. I'm going to make it so obvious. It's the prep work before birth. And that's why I want to tell you, like, just back at the beginning here when I was like, there are things that you can, this is why I think every mom should just approach it as if, just in the back of your mind, if for some reason I have to have an induction, I'm going to make sure my body is so ready. And here's how you do that. So first of all, I want to say that the success of an induction is going to depend greatly on the readiness of the body. And so that's where we get to talking about Bishop scores. And you guys have heard me talk about this before, but with a Bishop score, this is a score with points that are assigned that tell somebody, that tell a provider how likely an induction is going to be successful for mom. And by successful, I mean lack of a ton of intervention and ending with a cesarean birth. There's much less that needs to happen for mom to get her body moving and going into labor. So for example, these points are assigned for 5 different categories. So that's dilation, that's how open your cervix is. Station, that's how high or low in the pelvis your baby is. Effacement, that's how thin your cervix is. The other thing they're looking for is something called consistency. And this is the firmness, or in other words, ripeness of the cervix. It's how soft it is or hard it is to the touch. And then the position of the cervix. It can be anterior, it can be posterior. So when you are not ready or less ready to give birth, that cervix is going to aim all the way towards your back. And so like maybe when you've had a vaginal exam, they're like, oh, I had to walk your cervix forward. Oh, it's really far back. Maybe we'll try this next time. That just means we're not ready yet. We're just going to kind of be happy here. And so what happens is they kind of throw it into this calculator. You get points that are assigned for each of these categories: dilation, station, effacement, consistency, and position. And it's said that if you have a score of 8 or higher, which 2 points are assigned for each category, if you have a score of 8 or higher, then you are favorable for induction. Or in other words, induction is going to go well. We have a really good chance of induction going really well, little intervention, vaginal birth. If you have a score of 6 or lower, then it is less favorable. There's a lot more work that needs to be done to make this induction less traumatic for mom and baby. What I'm going to say here is just back to the very best thing that you can do is to prepare your body prior to induction. So what are some of those things? This is for every mom. Every single mom can do this. So what are some of those things that you can do? Now, this is going to be some things you've heard, maybe you haven't, but you can start eating dates, for example, at 34 weeks. And you can eat them before that. It's not going to harm anything. But we're looking at 6 dates a day. And for some moms, it is just hard. And I have to tell you, there are some pretty good recipes within our private Facebook group, because moms are like, I can't eat them whole, or like, I can't look at another date. And so we've started sharing recipes, and some of those are really great. And you can look those up online as well. So dates, 6 a day, starting at 34 weeks. There are also birth prep tinctures. This is like Dr. Christopher's birth prep, or I'll put a couple of links within the show notes so that you guys can click on those and take a look for yourself. Again, those start at like 34 to 36 weeks, and it's something you take every day. Evening primrose oil. You know, as I'm saying these things, this is stuff certainly because I'm not a medical provider, because I can't look at your charts and tell you what's safe and effective and whatever for you. Make sure that you're speaking with your provider about these things, that they know what you're doing. But evening primrose oil, when inserted vaginally, especially, it can be taken orally and vaginally. The best that we've seen for it softening the cervix, which is the goal of what it does, is to do vaginally. And there is, like, you can take oral and vaginal at the same time. But again, you're going to want to make sure and go over those amounts with something that can help you. And then red raspberry leaf tea. Red raspberry leaf tea is known to strengthen and tone the uterus, is what it says. And that's because it helps it contract. And that is why you need to be a little careful with it. Some women are very sensitive to it, and other women can drink cups and cups and cups of it a day and not feel a thing. So listen to your body. Red raspberry leaf is something that can be, like, you can drink it your whole pregnancy. However, speak with your provider. Even some midwives are like, don't start it till later. So you want to make sure that it's whatever is good for you. But red raspberry leaf tea, along with these other things, right? We're just encouraging a little bit of happy movement and preparedness down there. And then we've got, so those are kind of like the supplements, things that you can do prep wise. And there's probably some more too. I'm going to throw out the main ones. Physical prep are things like, make sure that you're seeing a chiropractor that's certified in the Webster's technique and as regularly as possible. Intercourse, because if we're talking about prostaglandins and softening the cervix area, that is where semen is a natural prostaglandin. So it's not going to be necessarily the same as like the concentration that would come from something like Cervidil or Cytotec, but it can do the job. It's part of the process. It's so good to be doing that. So obviously when you are having intercourse, you want to make sure that dad finishes and that you finish, because you're going to create contractions by having an orgasm, and he is going to help with those contractions and the softening of the cervix with the semen. So you want both of you guys to finish. It's very important. And then walking. So obviously, right? But if you're not walking and you're not walking regularly, this is something you can start now. And that includes even some curb walking as you get a little bit closer. 34, 36 weeks, maybe 10 minutes out of your 30-minute walk that you're going to try to do every day or a couple times a week, you're going to do some curb walking. And that's going to be really good for you. Acupressure points with clary sage is another really, really good one. So we talk about spleen 6 a lot, and I will try and help you find it since you're just listening to me. But if you put, you're going to find your ankle bone, like the inside of your leg, you'll find the ankle bone, and then you'll do about 3 fingers. You'll put 3 fingers together right above it and then push on the point right above that. And it should be kind of a squishy spot, and it should be quite a bit tender, especially when you're pregnant, especially when you're more pregnant. So when you find that spot, what you can do is you can either rub clary sage oil on your feet and or on that specific pressure point, or you can smell clary sage oil. That way, if things get too intense, you can just keep it away, put it away, because once you put an oil on, you can't get it off, right? And as you use that, you're going to want to press those acupressure points. And you can also have somebody, your birth partner, help you do this. You can have a massage therapist help you do this. Chiropractor will know where this point is and they can help you do this. And you just kind of like rotate a couple of these things. But this is something that you can do and it can encourage things to get moving. Massage is another one, and that's a great one for dads to do and practice with you. And that's wonderful. Relaxation is something that you should totally be practicing, especially if you're talking about, I want to have an induction without medication. If you are not prepared to know how to relax and work with your body during contractions, I mean, it's hard enough, especially when we're talking about induction and Pitocin contractions, it's hard enough to do it with it. But if you're not prepared and you're not ready and really understand how to work with your body and how to relax, it will be that much harder for you, especially if you're trying to go without medication. So learning how to relax, and I know that sounds so silly, but it is a learned technique. This is something that we talk about muscle memory and learning how to relax. If you even pause right now and close your eyes and just breathe, that's not even relaxed, right? Like, think of everything that is tense in your body if you were to close your eyes and just breathe. Like, from your forehead, down your face, your shoulders, all the way down. When you start practicing relaxation and you're laying in bed and you're trying to imagine these different things relaxing, it almost feels like you're fighting it for a little bit. It's really frustrating. And so I remember when I was learning, and I do not practice relaxation like this right now since I have been pregnant. Like, it's been a couple years. And so when I do yoga or whatever with friends, or I really try to focus on this, I'm like, shoot, I am out of practice. It is a learned technique. And if you are someone that does this all the time and you just get it and this is your thing, that's going to be a great benefit to you. But if you're not, I promise that you can learn it. And I want you to aim for those, for these techniques. So, and relaxation, again, that's covered in the birth course and stuff, but relaxation with this being a learned thing, even if you take 10 to 15 minutes every day and you do it maybe before bed, you get into a really comfortable position, you make the lights dim, you pick a scent, maybe lavender, something simple, and you practice, okay, I'm going to go from my head to my toe, and with every breath, I'm going to breathe into my belly and make it really big. And then every time I exhale, I'm going to relax something else. And you just go from your head to your feet. And I mean, like, okay, now I'm relaxing the top of my head, and now my forehead, and then my eyebrows and my eyelids. I mean, every single tiny little part of you that you can stand. And if you do that 10 to 15 minutes a day, that can get you on the start of feeling that relaxation. And you'll see what I mean just after a couple of nights. You'll probably start really frustrated. The first couple of nights will probably be really frustrating. And then all of a sudden you'll be like, oh my gosh, I was able to relax it that time. I could feel it let go. So it's a visual thing. It's a mental thing. And it's really learning to work with your body. Along with that is meditation. I think meditation is very powerful. And I want to put positive affirmations and meditation with that. So for example, within the birth course, we've got like a couple of guided meditations. And that's just something that you're listening to kind of in your ear. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to think about anything except for what the meditation is telling you. Some are fear release, some are positive affirmations, some walk you through, like, you know, the valley of birth, or I can't remember exactly what we call it, but like it walks you through what this can look like and how beautiful it can be. And then some of them are like, okay, now we're going to deal with any fears that you have, and you can see them and they're doing this and we're going to put them in this place. And it's really, really powerful. But it's kind of this like mental space and just being in that really positive area. So meditation can be a really, really wonderful, beautiful thing. And it's stuff that you can take into the birth space with you. Along with that is the like mechanics of things, understanding how the body works. And actually, this was very relaxing to me during labor. I didn't know that it would be, but understanding just how my body is, like what happens during first stage, what's happening on the inside, how am I going to react to it on the outside? In other words, how am I going to know where I'm at and why I'm there, what my body is doing? And so when I was having contractions, on top of using mantras or positive affirmations or things that were like I can do anything for a minute, on top of those things that I was kind of like repeating to myself that were really comforting, very helpful, I was also with every breath envisioning what my cervix was doing, what my uterus was doing, what my baby was doing. And it was really helpful to feel like we're all working together, and I can do this, and I can do this. There's some of that preparation there that needs to go along with it. And I want to tell you guys right now too, your birth partner is part of this preparation. you can't go into induction, you can't go into birth or any part of this and expect, if you haven't practiced with your birth partner before, to all of a sudden have it kick in. That's not how it works. Ask my husband. He's very, very clear about that. So working with your birth partner is going to be huge. And that is like, you're going to have to start communication early. You want them understanding what kind of positions are good for a mom to be in. That way, when you're going through it and it's really hard and the only thing you're focusing on is getting through this contraction, your birth partner can be there and say, hey, sweetie, take a nice deep breath after this next contraction. Let's try and move from squatting to hands and knees. And in your head, you're like, okay, then that's the next thing I'm going to do. And you can focus on that. You don't want to have to be the one to come up with the ideas unless it's very intuitive, like, ooh, squatting doesn't feel good. Let's move, right? But understanding some different positions, understanding how counter pressure works and how to do it effectively. That's another thing. If you just practice a little bit during pregnancy and then it's go time, it's going to take a minute for dad to understand how to support mom with those counter pressure positions. And it just makes it a little trickier because especially if you've got contractions that you don't have a ton of time to ease into, maybe they come on longer, stronger, closer together because of that Pitocin, you might not have that grace period or as much of it for you guys to be figuring that out. So practice these kinds of things beforehand. Along with that is going to be breathing. Dad should know how to like get you back on track if he notices the breathing getting off or like a little shallow or in your chest. There's things that you can do. There's techniques that you can use. And things like distraction, that's another one. And not the like, hey, sweetie, look at this TikTok video, right? I might be talking about my husband here. Like, hey, sweetie, look at these funny cats. Not necessarily that kind of distraction, but he should have an idea. Same with water, knowing how water is so important for a mom and how to work with her on that. All of those things need to happen prior to the birth. And if you get really good at them in practice, which is so, it might sound so silly, but it's so important. Like think of, I'm doing this with my teenagers now, like role play kind of stuff, right? It's like, you're going to come upon people, maybe they'll be your friends, maybe they'll be just people in a social setting that are going to offer you things, you know, that you shouldn't be taking, or like you have goals in this life and you don't want to be a part of what they're offering. What are you going to do? And it's so silly and it seems so stupid, but it's like this role play over and over and over again. That way, when the decision comes, you don't have to think, you don't have to wonder how you're going to say it or what. You've already made the decision. It's the same thing with birth. You've already practiced that. You know which technique to use. Oh, when this happens, I do this. Why? Because we practiced it a million times. We did all the labor rehearsals. We did all the relaxation practice. We asked the questions. It matters. So trust me, do the practice. Okay, along with that is the mental prep. And like this is part of that preparation beforehand. I've talked about a lot of it already, but that is making sure that communication is strong from the beginning. And it's okay if it's not at the beginning. But in other words, I want you to like have it in your head so that you can start working on it at the beginning. Communication is everything. And even as I think of like myself and my husband, it was not super good when it came to like what I needed during birth. He had his own set of ideas on like how he was going to handle things. And I had my own ideas on how I wanted him to handle things. And so like by the third baby, we were set. Like it was good. We had had a couple practice runs. But if you guys can get that at the first baby, and particularly if you're talking about an induction, it's going to make all the difference. Because if you guys are that connected, if dad knows like, oh my gosh, like when this happens, I'm looking at mom and I know she either is going to be happy with this and fine, or she's going to want to make her own decision, or I'm going to need to stand up for her. If you guys have that communication and that connection and dad knows exactly what you're going to need, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier during that time for you to be focused on what you're doing because all the other stuff is being taken care of. Positive affirmations, that just goes along with the mental prep. Talking to people that have really positive birth stories, particularly if you're coming up to an induction, you would want to talk to somebody who had a really positive, in this case, without an epidural induction, which we've got some in the birth course. In other words, people do it. It's not like a nobody does this kind of thing. You want to talk to other people that have that and have people around you that are going to be encouraging, period. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you tell your mom like, oh, I have to, you know, I'm being induced on Friday, but I still want to go on Medicaid. And she just laughs and is like, good luck. You know, I've had Pitocin contractions and that's going to suck. if that's who you're communicating with, depending on how much weight that person has in your life, that could be really like, I'm going to put that in the back of my head and I have no control over it. Now it's going to sit there and fester and I'm not going to be able to stop thinking about this, you know? So you really got to be careful about who you have close to you when you're going into something like this. And you've got such like a strong opinion about what you want to do. That mental game really does have an effect on our physical bodies and our emotions and how we handle things. And I promise if you do the mental prep work, you will be better off. 100%. There's no part of preparation that you're going to ever say, I did too much of this or I wish I hadn't ever. So keep that in your mind. If you want to do an induction without an epidural, you can do it. You can 100%. And there's also going to be some times where utilizing a tool like an epidural is going to be good and it's okay to do it. So I always want to leave you with, however you choose to do it and however this ends up, it's okay. The important part is having a say in it, understanding how it goes. But here's the thing. The prep work is going to have a big impact on how smoothly that induction goes, right? Like when we're talking about Bishop scores and stuff, we can have an effect on those kinds of things, those kinds of physical things and the mental ones. And so the more smooth the induction goes, the quicker it's going to go. So then we're not going to get so burnt out, hopefully. And with it moving quicker, there's actually a greater chance that you can turn that Pitocin off or down. And that means the greater chance you're going to have for managing the sensations of Pitocin contractions throughout. And the greater chance you have of managing that, the greater chance you have of not needing to utilize those other tools and sources and things like that. So I hope some of that was helpful. I do hope that if you're listening, that you see that should that be your goal, like my goal is even if I need this induction, I can still go through all the sensations of birth. That's excellent. The other thing I want to talk about really quick before I get off, there's a difference between pushing through and doing hard things and suffering. And sometimes it can be a fine line. And sometimes it's really important for your birth partner to understand what that looks like for you, because you can hit a point in any labor or birth where you've got it so set in your mind that you need to have this a certain way or you're going to feel bad or like you failed, that you will sit through and suffer through pains and decision making that you would otherwise not. And you don't want to look back on a birth and feel sad or upset or regret anything like that, where you could have said, this is really hard and I know I wanted to do it this way and I think I could have more joy and not as much trauma or suffering should I choose to utilize some of these tools available to me. So at any point, it's okay to say, I would like a little support in a different way. It's tricky too, especially if you haven't given birth before or you haven't had Pitocin before. We can be so hard on ourselves and it's just a different sensation and it's not the same. And it's not because you're weak and it's not because you're broken. It's just a different path to getting that baby here. So keep that in the back of your mind as you're planning and preparing for these things. But the one thing I want to invite you to do is take a good birth course. All of these things that I talk about on here, all of the stuff that I'm talking about today with induction and epidurals and maybe why you need an induction or anything like that, the mental prep, the physical prep, all of that's going to be covered in a really good birth course. And of course, if you're listening to me here, I would love to welcome you into the My Essential Birth Course. So if you're ever curious, you can always reach out to me with any questions that you have at hello@myessentialbirth.com. I know I interact with a lot of you anyways. Like I'm here for the DM questions and the email questions. I love it. And, you know, if you're ever curious and you want to see a little bit more about what's inside, it's myessentialbirth.com/get-started. All one word. And if you scroll down through that get started page, it literally walks you through every single thing that is covered week to week, class to class. Plus you get obviously the Facebook group and the time with me and the personal questions and all that stuff. But I just like the reason that I do this is because of the impact that it made on my life. And then once I started teaching birth classes, seeing the impact it makes on every pregnant mom's life. So, and dad, every dad that comes along with mom and is, you know, a part of this, it's like, oh, I didn't know that. And this is actually really interesting. And now I know how to help and support and love on mom. So it makes a big difference. That's it for this week, but make sure you subscribe to the podcast so that you get notifications first as I drop new episode every week. And don't forget to head over to myessentialbirth.com for all of the free downloads mentioned here and to join the birth course and community serving pregnant moms just like you. If you enjoyed this and other episodes, I would love it if you would take a few minutes to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I read every single one and include one at the beginning of each episode. See you next week.